Dude, I challenge you. Find somebody that you see in there that's working their butts off that may not be in the best shape of their lives and go tell them good job. It makes their day. Everybody wants to be told, you're doing great. I mean, I want it. You want it. You love it when somebody comes up and says, dude, I've been listening to School Sucks for 5 years. You've changed my life. That feels good to you.
Absolutely. Well,
always be that dude, man. Don't only let the gym change your body, but let it change life itself, dude. I mean, let it take over and be healthy and promote a healthy lifestyle. And, I mean, that'll go along hand in hand with liberty, encouraging people to do right. That's the best feeling in the world, is to make somebody smile, to make somebody feel good, to make somebody laugh. I mean, you've done your job that day if you can achieve those things.
And they say you don't tug on Superman's cape, you don't spit into the wind, you don't pull a mask off that old Lone Ranger, and you don't mess around with Jim. I don't do that.
Welcome to the School Sucks Project, a podcast, YouTube channel, and online community dedicated to personal growth and intellectual self-defense.
We promote learning alternatives, home education, critical thinking, peaceful parenting, organization and productivity, and better communication strategies.
Please remember to visit schoolsucksproject.com to get comprehensive show notes, relevant links,
or to just leave comments.
Follow us on Twitter at School Sucks Show. Subscribe to our YouTube channel, username School Sucks Podcast, and get involved in our Facebook group. Just search for School Sucks Project.
Hey, everybody, this is Brett. Welcome back to School Sucks. Today is December 31st. This is the final show of 2018, the season 9 finale. And it's a show that I had been looking forward to for quite some time. It is with my old friend, Jamie Crane. And before I go any further, I just want to say, if you're a new listener, and we have some new listeners, I've been looking at downloads and we've got a lot of new people checking out the podcast this week. I think one of the reasons might be we were added to a very cool list that Praxis put out called 30 Podcasts for Curious Minds in 2019. And we were in great company with shows like Rogan and Tom Woods, Tim Ferriss and Dan Carlin. And there's a few podcasts on this list that I definitely want to check out, with few future collaborations in the works as well. Google Discover Praxis Top 30 Podcasts, and you'll find this list. And my friend Joel posted it in the School Sucks group, so you can check it out there as well. So anyway, if you're new, probably not the best place to start, because Jamie and I do a lot of reminiscing about the old days of what I'm going to call the Liberty Movement. And some of you might not even know what that is. We also do a lot of reminiscing about our work together. Jamie and I used to do a comedy show back in 2011. It was a very different time. So a lot of that, if you're new to this whole scene, you might not find too interesting. I recommend the show with T.K. Coleman. That's pretty recent, on the front page of schoolsucksproject.com. And also the show with Scott Hambrick on The Great Conversation, something I'd recommend highly to a new listener. Or, you know, if you're an Android user and you're using something like Podcast Addict, just give it a good scroll, you know, like take your finger and just go whip, you know, and let it fly for a while and see where you land. Or if you're an Apple user and you're on whatever shitty podcast app came with your iPhone, do the same thing. Take a look through our archives there and select something that you like. Today's show was supposed to be entirely about health and fitness, but it went in a variety of interesting directions. And I actually received some pretty helpful advice from Mr. Jamie Crane on some unrelated topics. So if you've been involved with School Sucks for a while, I think you will enjoy today's conversation. A rather serious conversation, by the way. I was worried it was too serious, so I put some old clips in from the old days of Jamie and I working together. But we used to do this podcast called Wheels Off Liberty. We're going to talk about this in the show. I really love the collaborative process of that. We planned skits. Jamie and I actually wrote my most favorite joke I ever got to tell. The target of that joke was activist John Bush. You're going to hear it in the show today. But my motive for the show today, when I see somebody go through a significant personal transformation, I like to know how they did it and why they did it. So that's a bulk of our conversation, but we're also going to talk about why Jamie got off Facebook. Like I said, there'll be some reminiscing. We're going to talk about mixing comedy with outreach. And even though today's show has a fitness focus, I want to be very clear that we do not give any kind of prescriptive diet or fitness advice on this show. This particular episode is certainly not intended to be a commercial for testosterone replacement therapy. Even though it sounds very much like Jamie is making that recommendation, There's a lot of research a man should do before venturing down that road. And this is a relatively new kind of treatment. I don't believe there's an abundance of long-term results of TRT, but Jamie's been doing it for the last year. He actually introduced this idea when I was in Oklahoma last year. Also interesting, it is about the one-year anniversary of the Wheels Off Liberty anniversary show that I put out in 2017. So it was nice that Jamie and I could get together and celebrate that as well. Thank you for listening to School Sucks in 2018, and I want to wish everybody a very happy new year. I'm getting ready to leave New Hampshire again. I'm hitting the road. I'm going to go see my dear friends Rich and Lisa in Connecticut for the second time on this trip, and hopefully we'll get to do a little recording while I'm there. And then I'm on the way to see a good friend in New York for what I understand is a kind of ideas summit. And I've never been to anything like this before, but that's happening next weekend. And I think that's going to get me really energized intellectually. So maybe I'll do a little recording in the car as I make the long trek across the Pennsylvania wilderness, arriving back in the Berg about a week from today. I'm looking forward to that as well. In fact, my friend there, Andrew, who you know from the Discomfort Zone, if you listen to that, we were on Skype this morning. And I know I've said this a bunch of times, but they just keep getting more uncomfortable. Today's Discomfort Zone was a difficult one, a lot of really personal material, but I was really, really grateful that we could have the conversation because there's some things about being in New Hampshire that were kind of difficult, were kind of uncomfortable this week. So we dig into that long form. And the Discomfort Zone is available to people who support this show, making this entire operation possible. There's a number of ways to do that. You can be a part of our AV club, schoolsucksproject.com/AV, or you can support us on Patreon, patreon.com/schoolsucks. Everybody just stay calm about Patreon for the time being, if you ask me. I will talk about that more soon. We're figuring it out. We're looking at options. And I also want to say that this whole crisis with Patreon has so far affected us only a little. I thought this could be a real disaster. I want to say thank you to everybody who supports us there for sticking with that. It is really, really important to the health of this show. Thank you so much for listening, for your support. Happy New Year. And I will talk to you again as soon as I can. And here's my conversation with the legendary Jamie Crane. One of my favorite people, Jamie Crane, welcome to the show.
What's up, Brett?
Has anyone ever done this before? Has anyone ever interviewed you about being you and what you do?
Never. I've had the opportunity before, but never from like a prestigious show, so I always turn them down.
What was the opportunity that you had?
Like Lou Rockwell, Moneyline, Dr. Ron Paul, but nobody to your caliber.
Oh, thank you.
You know, I turned them down. They're like, once I got the opportunity for School Sucks and the famous Brett Van Hott, well, I had to take the opportunity.
Well, there's people who've been listening, you know, to me for a long time, and they know who you are. But for those who are new, how do you explain yourself?
Oh, man, that's evolved over the years.
I know. Yeah. Right? Yeah.
You know, you was a guest on it all the time. Well, a regular on it toward the end. We had a show called Wheels Off Liberty, me and our buddy Mike Maddox. Mm-hmm. It was more of a lighthearted, comedy-based political show where we interviewed fake characters and told jokes and got drunk and recorded conversations is how it started.
Right.
And it kind of caught on. People thought we were funny. I don't really know why. They saw little glimpses into, I guess, redneck humor. And it was so funny. We didn't have no listenerships like from Oklahoma or Texas, really. It was all Northeast, like, you know, guys up north. I guess they thought our accents was funny or something. But since that time, I've become a father, got a wife of, goodness, 18, almost 19 years now.
Yeah.
Got a son that's 10. Kind of grew apart from doing radio all the time. I mean, it's time consuming, dude. You know that.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, when you're not really making money on it and doing it as a hobby, well, sometimes other things get in the way and you have to set it down for a while. I think eventually we might get back into it just for more of a fun reminiscing time and not have like weekly content or anything, which, you know, we was horrible about. We only want to do it when we want to do it. And that's like not a good formula for success when you're producing content, I guess.
You were talking pretty seriously like last year and earlier this year about bringing the show back. I mean, I don't know. It's risky in this world. A lot has changed.
Wouldn't that make it better though, Brett?
I think so. Yes. Yes.
I mean, it's back then you could say anything and we still got hate mail. Now, can you imagine? I mean, we would have all kinds of groups on us, which is kind of intriguing to me. I kind of like being the bad guy with all these political groups that's going around now, because we wouldn't change a bit. We would still be the same old Mike and Jamie, I think.
Right, right. So we did a Wheels Off Liberty reunion show when I was on my tour last year. We came through there in November, Nick Ulbrich and myself. Nick was traveling with me across the country for the first time. He was from Australia. And, you know, it was definitely his first trip to Oklahoma, my first trip to Oklahoma. And we did a reunion show where the premise was you had kind of become unfrozen from the year 2011, where you just sort of disappeared and then reappeared. And you had to integrate.
I was in the Mandela effect, I think, is what the premise of the show was, that me and Taryn Lupo, who was also a host of Wheels Off Liberty, and I was stuck into the Mandela world or something.
People should go back and listen. I'll put a link to it in the show notes, but I was so happy / ashamed how that show turned out. But no, it was interesting. I mean, we broke away from doing the show. I mean, it was your and Mike's show, and Mike couldn't do it for a while, so I filled in as one of the hosts. And we broke away from it in 2011, and obviously the world changed so dramatically in those 6 years. So it was fun to bring it back. And yeah, I agree with you. I think it would be really interesting to bring that same style of show into the conversation that's going on now with the libertarian movement, how it became really divided, that fracture almost made the momentum or the cohesion that existed when we were doing so much of that work. And a lot of us were really energized by people like Ron Paul 6-7 years ago. Like, a lot of that is just gone now. And people have kind of drifted off in their own directions and into their own lives. But there was a different kind of energy with this back then.
Yeah. Oh, definitely. The movement was so, it was so fresh. And I mean, it was so exciting at one time to explain to somebody that's never heard about the gun in the room.
Right.
I mean, I'm sure most of your listeners, but how many times can you personally explain the gun in the room before you get tired of explaining it? And I think that's kind of where the freedom movement went to, was boredom. You get tired of explaining. Once you grasp the concept of freedom and personal responsibility and liberty, you're having to explain basic math to grown adults on a daily basis. You get tired of that in a way, or I did for one. If it wasn't for off-color humor, I mean, our show would have been done away with in 20 episodes, and we got like 100 episodes before we quit.
Oh, yeah. So, and you guys found a lot of really cool ways to riff on a lot of stuff that was happening. I do want to reminisce about that a little bit before we get into the topic today. But it's interesting that you say that, because it seemed like over the last few years, we saw a lot of people move like in more of an alt-right direction, which was like, and a lot of people move in kind of a social justice direction, which were new edges, right? I remember being really attracted to this because it had an edge to it. It was out of the mainstream. It made me feel like a kind of intellectual superiority. And I think a lot of people, I don't want to be like, you know, psychologize an entire movement, but I think a lot of people were attracted to that. And, you know, I honestly have admitted on my show that was like part of the reason that I got into it. I thought it was cool to win debates. Like, you know, we were both Free Talk Live fans. And I remember when George Bush was president and all these, you know, it was talk radio. So everyone calling in was right wingers and they didn't know anything. And Mark and Ian would just shred them. And then we saw people like Stefan Molyneux do it. That was attractive. That was one of the things that attracted me to it. How about you?
Yeah, I mean, that and like me and Maddox, we grew up across the street from each other, and We've always shared this dry comedy, and we got each other's humor. We could play off of each other all of our lives. I mean, by the time we was like 10 years old, we understood each other and we could carry each other's jokes for us. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's just what happens with buddies. I mean, you're drinking buddies. You have vested interest. I used to go to Maddox's when I was like 15 years old. He would sneak me beers and we'd play Nintendo. You know, I mean, that's how long it went back for us. So we found humor in it and thought, man, we'll record a couple of these. And actually, I called Mark Edge because I was a Free Talk Live fan on like our 8th episode. And I said, hey, we want to interview you guys.
Yeah.
And so they came on and we interviewed them. And Ian just fell in love with us. He said, I mean, we said something that was just off the wall stupid that Ian never heard before, but it was a Liberty principle, but it was funny. And he's like, dude, I love these guys. They're like good radio. Would you mind being on LRN FM? And I'm like, sure. And they started promoting us on the show and stuff. And before you know it, our podcast goes from 80 downloads and overnight we're getting 1,000, and then it grows to 2,000.
Yep.
And, you know, eventually we're like on the top page of a political podcast. And our whole stick was, we're two dumb rednecks from Oklahoma. And I think our tagline was, if these two idiots can understand liberty, then you can too. And then we just had fun with it. We created Facebook groups promoting to ban Wheels Off Liberty.
Yep.
And we'd be trolling people on there. And dude, we just had time. I'm shocked we didn't get fired from our jobs, because probably 6 out of 8 hours in every day of our jobs, we just spent trolling people on Facebook and message boards, you know, so we didn't get much work done for sure.
Can you believe that we interviewed Stefan Molyneux? Like, wasn't that, it was me and you, and we had him on the show. We interviewed him.
This is a guy whose career was launched on Wheels Off Liberty.
Ooh.
And I know that he's going to say great things about us. Here's a voice message from Stefan Molyneux.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, big name.
This is Stefan Molyneux from Free Domain Radio, and that was the worst f***ing show I have ever heard. You went from an R-rated podcast that f***ing sucked to a PG-rated podcast that is the most f***ing pathetic piece of shit I have ever listened to. Thank you for your time.
Oh, good God!
I tried to tell you guys before. Oh, and by the way, Stefan Molyneux does not like this show or any of us at all. And then everybody else we interviewed was fake, like Osama bin Laden, from heaven.
So, heaven's been going going good? It's treating you good?
Sometimes I did get lonely, though, for my good friend George W. Bush. But, you know, it's better than I thought. George W. Bush come to heaven every once in a while and talk to Osama.
You're kidding me.
Whoa! That's kind of crazy, dude. How does George Bush get to heaven?
Well, ask him. He's right here. Do y'all want to talk to George W. Bush?
Hey there.
Goodness, it's George W. Bush. George, how do you get to heaven, dude?
Well, you see, long story short, you guys know, you understand, I'm sure, that the Earth is run by transdimensional lizard Jews, right? Am I revealing that? Am I breaking that on your show?
No, we've have known this on Wheels Off Liberty.
Well, we go to Bohemian Grove. They wear suits, so they look like us, but they are our masters, and they taught me how to do the transdimensional teleportation, so I can get to and from. See what I'm saying?
Man, that's amazing. So you just go to heaven to hang out with Osama bin Laden and like kick it with him?
I go up on the weekends. We have like a Sunday dinner, and then we watch The Sopranos, which is conveniently still on the air in heaven. It's like in its 12th season. Great.
It is great to hang out with George W. Bush every weekend and watch these Sopranos. We are good buddies.
Yeah, well, you know, we go way back. It was actually Osama's brother that got me started in the oil business, a little company called Arbusto, and his brother Salim. How's that crazy dickhead doing anyway, Osama, OB? I call Osama OB, short for Osama Bin.
All these archives are in the bonus content section of School Sucks, by the way. I managed to grab them before they disappeared, so I have them all.
We did have some just fantastic fake guests. I think one of my favorite was there was a gay witch named Hocus Pocus, mm-hmm. and he had a whole bag full of wands, but all of his wands were actually just dildos, and he didn't know it. So, and I mean, today, if you did that, I think you would be in a little bit of trouble.
No, who was the congressman who exposed himself? Or no, he was sending, he was sexting.
Wiener. Yeah.
We interviewed his penis. I mean,
yes.
These were amazing. These were amazing conversations. The basic format of the show, and this is a place we can turn in the conversation, was you were kind of a buffoon and Maddox tolerated you.
Yes.
Like reluctantly. And that dynamic worked so great for the show. And then I think, you know, I came on and I did that same kind of like the straight man role, but also did a lot of the voices. And it was just so much fun. That was such a great time. Yeah, I was thinking, like, we were getting on Skype tonight. And I'm like, when was the last time he and I were on Skype? Because we used to record the show on Skype. The last time I think we were actually on Skype together was during Porkfest. I drove home from the festival. It was like 2 hours away. And you and I wrote jokes for a roast.
Oh, my goodness, dude. That was the best roast ever, Brett.
The premise was you were supposed to do these jokes, and I was this nice, respectable man, and I was going to do your jokes for you. So I remember we did like a planning session, like a brainstorming on Skype for an hour and a half that night. And then I took what we wrote and I drove right back. I think that night I drove right back because there was no internet there. So I came home for a day to do that. And it was so worth it. But that might have been the last time we sat on Skype together.
I would like to – I think we're relying on Gay too much.
Okay. Man, it's hard to make a fanny pack joke and not go gay on it.
Yeah. So we have four so far.
Like four out of six are gay. Okay, that's enough of the gay, ain't it?
Yeah.
What gay ones do we have?
All right. This, let me go through them that have something gay in them. Ian, okay. The first one, the Bitcoins joke. John Bush.
When George W. Bush was the governor of Texas, he used to fuck little Mexican boys that he found on the street and then force the boys to take his last name. Isn't that right, John Bush? Folks, I didn't write these.
You've killed that, by the way. That
Thank
was,
you.
If your listeners have not seen that, can I tell them to go watch that?
Oh, absolutely.
Or does that, like, destroy everything that you've ever worked for?
No, I want to incorporate more of that side of me into this show. Yeah, I'll play a clip of it in the show. And I posted, like, wheels off. I posted the reunion show right in my podcast feed. So even though I talked for 5 minutes at the beginning of the show about how no one should listen to it.
I don't think you got as many viewers as what you was expecting out of that. But we've been gone for so long. I mean, I don't even know if there's libertarians anymore, honestly. And now I'm off Facebook, dude, and I really don't know what's going on. I love it.
Yeah, so, yeah. Why did you decide to do that?
Several reasons, dude. And one of them is going to be about our topic tonight, which is kind of talking about fitness. That honestly, that's one reason for it. But so much negativity. And honestly, would you like to come home to a family that behaved and talked like your feed on Facebook?
Absolutely not. Absolutely not.
And so why do we carry that in our pockets?
Yeah.
And I mean, it's just it drowns you, man. It really does. And and I tried to stay away from this, but your self-worth becomes how many likes you get.
Oh,
sure. Your self-worth becomes all that stuff. And I just decided there was more to life than that. And also I've been getting into fitness and I got to where I wanted to share my progress, and I'm not doing it for that. I'm not doing it to please other people. And I always hated those dudes that always posted gym selfies.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden I became like, but I've worked so hard at this, I want to share it with my friends.
Yeah. Yeah.
But your friends don't get it. I mean, nobody really cares. You got to do it for yourself or it's for nothing.
Mm-hmm.
So I didn't want to become that person. And you understand, like, I'm a very addicted person. Everything I do, I get addicted to. And I got addicted to working out. So I'm going to naturally start talking about working out. And it was wearing people's balls out, I think, too.
Yeah,
but
sure.
The main reason was just so much negativity, man. And I just decided I didn't want that anymore. Now I look at Twitter and you can actually follow topics that you're interested in. I mean, I follow like Dallas sports and sports writers, and I get to learn about the Rangers and Cowboys and that stuff that it ain't negative. You know, it's been like, now my account's actually deleted now. I think like it went off record today.
Oh,
so
wow.
I don't plan on going back, dude. I'm on Instagram. And honestly, I think my friends are prettier than they are smart. I'd rather look at pictures of them than read their opinions about things. So, you know, but it's never like that. On a one-on-one relationship, you never have a conversation with somebody when you're out duck hunting about complaints.
Yeah.
Everybody has a good time. But they get on Facebook and they want to complain. They want to say something stupid, and it just drags you down. And before you know it, dude, you're wasting 5 hours a day looking at all that crap. So I just thought there was a better way. I'm just sick of it.
Did you, in a way. Did you feel like you had kind of pigeonholed yourself? Because like when you came on the scene, you were very much this character, right? So anytime you post anything on Facebook, like there's just people who are ribbing you for it and making jokes and referencing things about Wheels Off Liberty that are like, you know, 5 or 6 years old. Yeah.
You can post something of your kid and somebody say something smart. Dude, this ain't, I'm not in character here. I'm just a just a dude, and I'm sharing this with my family, my cousins, my true friends, and they might drop the MF on a picture of my kid. Maybe the better solution is just like creating an account where you have like 80 people that you truly know in this world.
Yeah.
You know, if you know that many, and share it with them. But then those same people think that they have to impress their 900 friends, and you got to read their crap.
Yeah,
so,
sure.
And people, it's just everybody's looking for likes, dude. And I don't know. It gets tiresome, man. It really does. You're like in the 10th grade again.
Yeah.
You did get a lot of likes.
You used to get a lot of likes on stuff.
But you start desiring that kind of thing. You know what I mean? Then you feel like you got to be on top of your game. And it's like, why am I doing this, man? This is stupid. And I couldn't even write half the stuff I thought.
Mm-hmm.
My mom's friends on Facebook with me. I mean, she would still slap me with her purse or something. You know, it's like Facebook got ruined when mothers got on Facebook, Brett.
Yeah, that's so true. I got in trouble a few times. Yeah.
But now I'm just, you know, working, being a dad, going to the gym, dude. That's it. I mean, I've really got into lifting weights and trying to better myself. I mean, I feel like a strong body, a strong mind is kind of my new philosophy. And I think that's true. I think the more you take care of yourself, the better you feel, the brighter you are. The earlier you wake up in the morning, the quicker you're out of bed and ready to go do something. I feel like I'm 20 again, you know, something like that. So I'm going to chase this for a while and see where it goes.
So you're 43?
44. Just turned 44, man.
Oh, awesome. I don't know if you were out of shape, but you weren't in good shape like most of the time that I knew you. That was fair to say. Like you weren't fat, but you weren't doing anything really to take care of yourself. And that almost kind of went along with your sort of online persona and your character on the show.
Absolutely.
And when I was there last November, this is right in the show, and I couldn't tell if you were being serious or not. You talked about low T, and you had been investigating your testosterone levels being low, and you were going to start doing testosterone replacement therapy, TRT. Yeah.
You look muscly.
Yeah, you look bigger. Since this morning, you look bigger.
Straight up took some testosterone yesterday,
You
Mike.
Look erotically charged.
You know what I did? I went to my doctor, and I said, this was serious. You know how like most people go to the doctor and say, I think I might have some flu or something like that? I go, doctor, I want big muscles and to be more horny.
With a smaller dick.
No. You're messing up on that. You see,
you're going to go straight. What's her name? Caitlyn Jenner, honestly.
No, I got on the testosterone, Mike. And the testosterone has made this beard more marvelous.
So you really did this at that time?
Absolutely. But, I mean, here's the story about that. I've been going to the gym about a year.
Yeah.
And then I had double shoulder surgery.
Right.
So I had to take off about 8 months to heal up and everything. But I went fishing with one of my buddies who's like one of the best anglers in the world. No lie. He makes a living fishing. And we were out at Lake Murray, which is a local lake around here. Beautiful place. And he takes his shirt off. I mean, it's nice out. He pulls his shirt off. He's in some shorts. I look over at him. I'm like, damn, dude. Like, he's older than me, and the dude's rocking like a six pack, and his chest is built. He's got some good arms and everything. I'm like, man, what are you doing? I'm going to the gym. I ain't getting this. He goes, man, you got to go get on testosterone. He said, no lie. He said, you got to do this. So I went and got tested, and my doctor looked at my levels, and she was like, nah, you ain't getting nothing. And I called my buddy, and he said, nah, you got to go to my doctor, bro. So I went to his doctor, which is actually a gynecologist. I see a gynecologist now. She's a hormone doctor here in town.
Interesting.
And she goes, what's your goals? And I said, I would like to cut fat. I'd like to be more proud of my body, and I'd like to have a higher libido.
Yeah.
And she goes, we're moving you up to 1300. She said, you going to the gym? And I said, yeah. She said, all right, then I got you covered. And dude, she jacked me up. And it's like, it's the best thing in the world, Brett. I mean, you have no idea how good you feel with a high T level. You work out. I mean, you go to the gym pretty regular, don't you?
Yeah, I'm probably in the best shape I've been in since I was 25.
Right.
Yeah. And I've had a partner that I've been, you know, a couple of guys actually that I've been going with here, and that's helped. It helps to push you. Like, I always went. I didn't skip days. But, you know, having someone to go with to like, push you to do more every time. And, like, I've done the right plan for me. But I do very, very little supplementation. And that was, like, one of the things I wanted to ask you about. Did the doctor talk to you at all about the risks or the side effects of doing TRT?
Yeah, I mean, she told me, she said, basically – And I'd read some things online before I went, so I had some questions.
Right.
And I'm like, how's this for your heart? And she goes, listen, if having high testosterone was bad for you, then every male would die when they're 22 years old, because that's when your testosterone's the highest, you know, 22 to 24. She said, this is good for muscles. Your heart's a muscle. She said, you're going to be in the best shape of your life, and it's going to be better for your overall health. Now, I mean, I guess they could come up with something different. In 2 years, I might have a third testicle that's green or something. I don't know. Right. But right now, it's working out well for me, you know, and I am in the best shape. I went from 25.5% body fat to my current reading this week was 11.2.
Holy shit.
My original goal is to walk around at 10% body fat.
Yeah.
Is what I would like to do. So, yeah. And I'm still striving for that.
Right.
So. And I mean, I've gained muscle and lost fat. I recover faster. I sleep better. The libido's through the roof. Dude, I mean, I recommend it for everybody. You know, of course, I'm no doctor either. I don't know all the side effects for it, but I know that it's worked for me. And several of my buddies that I lived with, they're like, let me go get some of this. I mean, I got three or four guys at my local gym on it now, you know, and they're seeing like major gains.
Yeah.
So, and they're all, you know, they're all our age. I mean, it's not like, you know, 22-year-olds that's doing it. And then all of a sudden you start getting bigger and the big guy at the gym comes over and says, man, you ought to try this trend. And I'm like, nah, dude, no thanks. That's not something that I don't want to take, no, you know, testosterone for cattle or anything. I'm not into that. I don't want no steroids or anything. But, you know, TRT, it's legit, man. It really works. I don't know about all those pills that you see advertised to boost. I'm a big skeptic when it comes to any supplements like that, you know, but I do know that the T injection, it works. Now, I'm not saying that you can get a shot in your ass and sit on it all day.
Right.
I don't think that'll work for you. You have to put the work in, but your body recovers, you know, it does what it's supposed to do. So you can go do a heavy leg day. And then 2 days later, you feel like going to do a heavy leg day again. You know, once you recover that fast. So used to it would be 5 days, man, my legs would still be shot.
Oh, I see. I think that's also, there's like lots of things that you can tweak to get different results with that. So a lot of it is volume. So
yeah.
What I was doing is I was doing lower volume, higher frequency. So I was actually doing for a long time, and I've talked about this on the show before, a 3 day split, and it's actually called dog crap training. It was named after this guy, Dante Trudell, whose name was Dog Crap was his nickname in a bodybuilding forum. So like this, whatever you hit on Monday, you're hitting on Friday, and then you're hitting next Wednesday. So there's about 5 days of rest instead of 7 days of rest.
Right.
And you're doing really high intensity, but really low volume. So you're exhausting it, but you're not doing a muscle group, but you're not doing like endless sets. What I did this week, because I'm getting ready to take the rest of the year off, is I did 6 days a week and just did push, pull, push, pull, push, pull. I think tomorrow's the last day. It's a push day. So, you know, just splitting up, like one day would be hamstrings, back, and biceps, and the other day would be quads, chest, shoulders, triceps.
Right.
And I actually chose this just to do as a kind of experiment, because it said it is the best sort of regimen for natural lifters, like people who aren't doing a lot of supplementation, people who aren't doing TRT or anything more extreme than that. And, you know, I felt great this week. I've gotten really good results just doing 3 days a week and mixing in a little like light cardio. Like when the weather was nice, we would play tennis and making sure that I'm walking enough. But and maybe like some HIIT training once in a while, but not a lot of like chronic cardio, like being on a treadmill or running or stationary bike. Like there's nothing like that.
And, you know, and this might be interesting for your listeners to if they're deciding to get into fitness.
Yeah.
You see, like New Year's will suck at the gym. I mean, you know that. You're going to have all kinds of newbies in there.
Yeah.
And they got their resolutions. And maybe 5 or 10% of them is going to carry it on over to February.
Right, right.
But anybody that's wanting to get into this, make cardio secondary. If you only have time to go into the gym use it for weight training, and you'll see a better body transformation from lifting weights than you ever will from a treadmill or an elliptical machine.
Absolutely. I mean, totally agree.
There's absolutely no doubt. I'm not saying that cardio is unneeded. I mean, of course it's needed some, but you see so many people make the mistake of coming to the gym and going, I'll start lifting once I'm in better shape, and I'm going to get this fat off of me by running on a treadmill, where they're cheating themselves. Always start out with the weights, and you'll see a bigger body transformation than you ever will doing cardio.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's important to be in good cardiovascular health, because as you continue weight training more, you're going to want to be exerting yourself more and more. And that obviously requires a fair amount of cardiovascular health to be able to do that.
Sure.
You know, but that also doesn't have to be achieved by sitting on an exercise bike.
Play some basketball.
Absolutely.
I mean,
yeah.
Do something that's fun, because it's not for everybody. Running's not for everybody. I mean, a lot of people hate it, you know,
right.
And I know people who's in like fantastic shape, probably walking around at like 8% body fat, that never do cardio like what you would think at the gym level cardio is. I mean, they might go hiking, they might go do all kinds of fun activities for that. And by no means do they do cardio every time they go work out either. You know, you're gonna burn more fat the more lean muscle you develop. Which is another interesting thing about the low T that I found out was that of course, as we age, men get fatter. I mean, we get the love handles, we get the belly and everything. And the fatter that a man gets, the lower his testosterone gets.
Mm-hmm.
The lower his testosterone gets, the fatter he gets. The fatter he gets, the lower the testosterone. The lower the testosterone, the fatter.
Right.
You can see a downward spiral here.
Right, right.
And I believe in breaking that cycle now. You know, and if you can have the energy that you had when you was 25 again. And the body that recovers, I mean, genius. Hook me up, you know. I never was scared of doing anything when I was young. Now I try to live clean, but I'm like, yeah, I'll do this. I'll take this TRT for sure. And I mean, beyond that, dude, here's the only other thing that creatine, or they don't see the camera. I'm showing you a deal of creatine and fish oil.
Sure.
That's it.
Yeah.
I mean, real natural type deals. You know, creatine comes from meat. You just can't eat enough meat to get your level of creatine needed.
Right.
So I supplement that. And then I take fish oil because of, you know, health benefits for it. But basically that's it. I'm out of multivitamins and I have forgotten to pick them up the last 2 months. So, and I can't really tell any difference in the multivitamins. Cleaning up your diet is like, that's step number one, dude. I mean, I've always seen like memes and everything that said, you know, it's 80% diet, 20% gym.
Yeah.
And it actually might be 95% diet and 5% gym. If your idea is to, I mean, I think we all want to look good when we go to the pool, put our board shorts on, take our shirt off and not feel like somebody spilt the vanilla milkshake in some shorts.
Right,
I mean, that's basically what our goal is. I mean, call it vanity, whatever, but it feels good. It feels good to look good. It feels good to have good posture and to walk around confident.
But it's also evidence that you carry around with you as of the results of hard work, right? Like,
yes.
So many things that we do in life don't pay off immediately. They're cumulative. And you can't see it in a lot of things, especially if they're challenging, especially if they're new. We often don't stick with them. You know, like this is something that affects me in the work I do. Like, there's lots of friction with new things, but I'm always reminded just by taking care of myself that I know what to do when I encounter friction, right?
Yeah.
I can't, all I have to do is transport that from one area where I've been successful to another area where I've been successful. And that I'm like, there's more areas to transport it to, but I've seen the results of doing that. And I like those results. So I totally agree with what you're saying.
And, you know, even taking it on into the, work world.
Yeah. Yeah.
When you walk into a meeting, and your clothes fit right because you're not ashamed of your body.
Yeah.
And you're wearing a form-fitting shirt and nice pants. Well, dude, I think that carries over to people's perceptions about you as well.
Oh, of course. Sure.
You know, he takes care of himself. It's evident. He probably has things going on, and they might take you more seriously on whatever topics you're bringing up in business meetings too, you know? And dude, I mean, I think it's a good example for like, you know, Dax is now 10 years old and into sports, and he understands, dude, dad busts his ass at the gym.
Right.
If you want to work for something, you have to go do it. You know, nobody gives this to you. You know, don't let, like, I know we was talking about TRT. I mean, don't let that fool you. They're still, I mean, I'm going to the gym 6 days a week.
Right, and, right.
I mean, and I'm spending an hour to 2 hours, depending on what I'm doing that day, busting my ass. So it's not the TRT that's doing it. It's hard work that's doing it. You know, you could take steroids to your, you know, fall over of a stroke or heart attack or whatever steroids do.
Yeah.
Unless you dedicate yourself to the gym, you're not going to see any results.
Absolutely.
So it's there's still something to be said about the hard work that it takes to achieve things. And honestly, Brett, like at first, and this is something for like people who decided to maybe pursue this type of lifestyle. I mean, besides diet, you're not going to see results in 2 weeks.
Right.
You're not going to see results in a month. I mean, what you'll take a before picture and then in 6 months, take another picture shirtless and you'll go, oh, okay, I've trimmed up here. And then take another one in a year and you're like, damn, is that some abs I'm seeing? Mm-hmm. And pretty soon you have that confidence and the gym's not a scary place. You know, like, I don't know about where you work out, but I work out to the YMCA here in Ardmore, Oklahoma. And dude, all the guys are cool. They're all super cool, you know? And like, there's a lady there, I've seen her probably 3 or 4 times, and she's in there lifting weights. Now, she still probably weighs, if I was guessing, I'm not fat shaming here, she probably weighs 280, 290 pounds.
Yeah.
And she's in there busting her butt.
Yeah.
And I go tell her, I said, I'm proud of you, you're doing good. And she goes, I've lost 250 pounds so far.
Wow.
And I thought, wow. Holy moly. Dude, you get excited for people. And it's, you don't know these people, but you see them putting their work in and you're cheering for them. Yeah. Sometimes you don't want to go up to a brand new person and like, you know, give them knuckles or anything and tell them good job. But eventually those type of relationships develop and people start coming to you and developing friendships because you all have time together. It's a great place to meet some cool people, man, is the gym. If you all open your eyes, every once in a while, take your headphones off and talk to somebody. Man, there's some neat people in there, you know?
That's so very positive, Jamie. You know, like, I go to the gym in a city. The gym I go to is, like, right downtown. And because of the schedules of my friends, I'm usually in there at 5 o'clock at night. So it's almost like it, in my mind, enforces this kind of antagonistic relationship where everybody there is just in my way. And then I was kind of, like, looking at the facilities and you know, it's cramped, it's crowded, it's not the ideal space. And I was thinking about it today going, you know what? It's all of us versus this gym. It's all of us versus the fact that it's 5 o'clock, you know? And I don't need to be antagonistic towards these people, but I really haven't. And it's also because I'm usually there with my own friends. I haven't taken that approach, but people have come up and some dude just came up and said something to me like, hey, that was really cool. Like I was doing dumbbell rows or something. He goes like, that was a lot of weight. And I was like, well, thanks. That's really nice of you to say that. And it made my day. And it's interesting to think about the kind of positive energy that you could inject into that environment just by doing things like that. But it just seems, you know, Pittsburgh is on the way to the polite part of the country. And I like to think that it's like the gateway to the polite Midwest. But Oklahoma was one of the most friendly places I had ever been. But that's not an excuse not to do it somewhere else just because you're not in Oklahoma. Even though it might not have been the most comfortable thing for some dude to come up to me and say something to compliment me, it certainly made my day when he did. So yeah, I think that's totally awesome. And it's like the complete reverse of the attitude that I've taken in there so many days where I get pissed about, you know, having to wait for things or things missing from the places they're supposed to be. But the results of coming out of there, I always feel better. You know, and just to your thing about you're not going to see results in a week, you're not going to see results in a month. You're going to feel results. And I think that's the really important thing is that, you know, especially if you lay off for a long time and then you go back to it, like you probably did when your shoulder surgery was healed enough. When you went back in there, even though you weren't, you know, your numbers were probably way down from where they had been and you weren't going to see physical results right away, you probably felt great walking out of there the first day.
Oh, yeah. And even like your posture's better.
Exactly.
I
mean, yeah.
After a week, you're carrying yourself differently because you're more confident, you know, in that. But, you know, about talking to people in the gym, dude, I challenge you. Find somebody that you see in there that's working their butts off that may not be in the best shape of their lives and go tell them good job. Dude, it makes their day. I mean, like you will brighten up their day and they will work harder for the next month because they got noticed for hard work. Everybody wants to be told you're doing great. I mean, that's human nature. I mean, I want it. You want it. You love it when somebody comes up and says, dude, I've been listening to School Sucks for 5 years. You've changed my life. That feels good to you.
Absolutely.
Well, it feels good to these people too. You know, so always be that dude, man. Don't only let the gym change your body, but let it change life itself, dude. I mean, let it take over and be healthy and promote a healthy lifestyle. And I mean, that'll go along hand in hand with liberty, encouraging people to do right. And you are that guy. I mean, or you wouldn't be doing this show for how many years?
Yeah, right.
You're an encourager. That's what you are. So embrace it at the gym. Embrace it on everything you do, brother. You know, and you'll make people's days, man. And it's always fun to make somebody smile. That's the best feeling in the world, is to make somebody smile, to make somebody feel good, to make somebody laugh. I mean, you've done your job that day if you can achieve those things, for
absolutely
sure.
Agree, 100%. I love that. And it's so easy to forget that. Man, you really are off Facebook, huh? Look how positive you are.
I don't even think I've dropped an F-bomb yet. So,
no.
See, I'm turning a new leaf, Britt.
Not that you weren't always a very friendly guy. But yeah, that definitely goes a long way. It goes a long way for other people. I think it goes a long way for you. And it's what the world needs more of. It needs those injections of positivity and encouragement and those kinds of you know, human moments. I love that, Jamie. I love that you said that.
I got told the other day, it was before I got off Facebook, and somebody said, man, I always thought you was a dick. And I'm like, why did you think that? Well, because of your show and everything. And it, you know, I'm like, no, I've never been a dick, man. I've always been like a happy-go-lucky dude, you know, I mean, ever since high school and stuff. So it's weird how people will get misconceptions about you on either radio shows or social media or anything like that. You can, what you think tongue in cheek, somebody might take as serious and assume that you're the worst person in the world about things, you know? So,
right. Well, I think, like, you know, to be funny, you have to take risks. And a lot of times taking risks involves having a target. You know, like what is that they say about it? Comedy is tragedy plus time, right? So, yeah. So comedy has this sort of negativity built into it. And if you think about, like, how much of, like when I was doing that roast, and that was back in 2012, and I'm looking at the inventory of jokes, and I'm like, how many of these jokes are targeted at straight guys and about them being gay? Like, how many times are we recycling that one, right? But so much of the humor that we did, like, on the show, picking on poor Taryn, oh my God. But it's understood, like, once you're kind of in that environment, that's what's going to be on the table. And that's so much of what comedy is. So it's a shame that somebody would miss that and not understand that. But yeah, I mean, comedy has targets. And a lot of the times, those targets are your friends.
Yeah. And I've always thought that comedians are probably like some of the most brilliant people there are.
Yeah.
By making you think about things through humor is something that I've always found fascinating. And another thing that comedy's always done, and me and Maddox, we were discussing this probably 6 months or a year ago. We're both introverts. If you put either one of us in a group of people, it's like, I'm Ricky Bobby. I don't know what to do with my hands.
Right.
And we both adapted to using comedy in those situations. And I think that a lot of comedy is based upon introverts, where people want to say a point, but don't really want to, I really don't want to have a serious conversation about this topic, but I can tell a 15-second joke.
Right.
And people will understand that what I'm feeling about this topic. And I don't have to open myself up. You know, I don't have to let people in. And I think that probably most good comedians are probably introverts. I mean, you don't want to be on stage. You don't want to do all these things. But, you know, this is how they deal with situations. And it's kind of became a life for them in a way. That was just a conversation we had the other day, which would be a good whole different topic besides, you know, what we're addressing today.
Sure.
I'm sure that's an hour show.
Man, so. I would love to see somebody come, especially right now, like in the mainstream, come in and be able to use comedy in, you know, a lot of this political and social stuff in a way that could diffuse tension. It seems like, and I've talked about this a little bit on my show, audiences or maybe audiences didn't agree to this. They seem to agree to this, that they would trade things that were actually funny for just hearing crap that they agree with. Like, if you watch Saturday Night Live, like with the Matt Damon Kavanaugh impression thing on Saturday Night Live, it's not funny at all. right? But right. It's like giving – it's confirming people's biases, and they're just laughing as a response to hearing the stuff that makes them feel comfortable with what they already believe. And so much of late-night television – is, I mean, you know, like – feelers go out. People see which way the wind blows in the production of these shows. And then you put in front of the camera your Jimmy Kimmel, your Jimmy Fallon, your Seth Meyers, and they just perform what focus groups want, right?
Sure.
And that's a shame that that's kind of replacing comedy when, to what you're saying, people like Carlin and Bill Hicks and Rogan and Stanhope and, I mean, whoever, Anthony Jeselnik is great, those types of people – you know, edge or edgy is kind of cliche at this point, but that edge where they actually made people uncomfortable and they made people think about these things, but they made them, you know, laugh. I think it was Richard Pryor said, you know, if you've got, or maybe it was Carlin, if you've got like difficult information to deliver to people, make sure you're funny or they'll kill you.
Yeah.
You know? So that
absolutely,
idea.
Dude. Yeah. And I'm the world's missing that.
Yeah.
But, you know, the only bad part about that now is that, I mean, I'm somewhat of a funny guy. I'm not really funny right here on this. I mean, this is more of a serious conversation. This is so not Wheels Off Liberty, you know, of what we used to do together.
It's like the behind the scenes of it.
This yeah. I mean, this is more like a conversation that we would have on the phone when we was preparing for the show or something,
sure.
You know, when we wasn't writing jokes. But, man, right now it's just all low-hanging fruit. I don't feel like that you could write a joke that wasn't too easy to write. Everybody could write the joke right now.
Right,
it's
yeah.
just... Dude, they're playing the beat to the lowest common denominator, you know,
yeah.
and it's rallying votes is what they're doing. And maybe that's a sad thing to think about, is that that's where we're at as a society, where you can actually get behind some of these messages that you hear. I mean, it's really dumbed down.
It's almost like somebody's hypothetical, wouldn't it be funny if, has become a reality. You know,
yeah.
and that just like keeps happening. I feel like I've said that a bunch of times, and then these things have actually like manifested in reality. But obviously, that entire container in which all of this other stuff exists is Donald Trump becoming president. You know,
yeah.
I mean, that's like the ultimate. Wouldn't it be funny if? But at one time, it wasn't. You know, I mean, like it's interesting to go back to like 1987 and hear all the people who are asking Donald Trump to run for president. Donald Trump came to New Hampshire. He was invited to New Hampshire in 1988 to form or at least explore the possibility and give a presidential candidate like speech in Portsmouth, New Hampshire. So I mean, it, like after like the birther thing and the apprentice and you know, so much of what the wrestling, the idea of him becoming president just became absurd. And now that it's reality, it's like, what do you even do with this, with the rest of this reality? Yeah, it is. But so much of what's passing for comedy just isn't funny, and it's just incredibly safe. And the other side of that is we're seeing the people who are pushing the envelope almost come to the point where they can't be tolerated anymore because it's politically incorrect. I mean, this is nothing new either, but it's really intensified in the last 5 years or so. That now all these things are off land.
You would get banned from Facebook.
Sure.
I'm confident now that you would get banned from Facebook for being off color.
Sure, it's possible.
Where would you promote shows? What would you do now to have that type of platform and self-promote it? It'd be harder to do now than it was in 2009. For sure, you know, because people will report you. Everybody gets butt hurt. Everybody does. So, and they're going to turn you in. Everybody's a little tattletale, man. Everybody is the kid that you hated in the third grade. Everybody.
Yeah, I mean, well, it's a tactic. And the first time it happened to me, it's hard to believe, it was actually 2011. And it was when all of the – we talked about this on Wheels Off Liberty because I was pretty bent out of shape about it. But I went into all of these – I didn't even think about this as a possibility. It's just how differently I thought about the internet and online forums and social media back then. And I just started trying to mix it up with teachers and public sector workers who were involved in all those protests in Wisconsin against Governor Walker. And
yeah.
I lost my Facebook. I was reported as an abuser. And I wasn't being like – abusive. I was asking questions, and maybe there was like some palpable passive aggression in the way I was asking questions. But to be reported and lose my Facebook for 30 days for abuse was unconscionable to me. I couldn't believe that happened. But I mean, it was a tactic to, like, if you don't want to deal with what someone has to say, it's not like people are educated in this country to run towards uncomfortable ideas and engage with them in a deep and meaningful and challenging way. Where would we have been trained to do that? You know, most people are looking for easy answers. They're looking for the fastest route to feeling like they know what's going on and, you know, they're right about whatever opinions they have. So that, I mean, as social media has expanded, we've seen these echo chamber walls just get higher and higher and higher to the point where what's outside of that echo chamber is absolutely intolerable and unimaginable that people would think differently. Higher education is a big part of it because a lot of the people who've spilled out of a lot of these, you know, leftist or progressive higher education programs are now the people getting more and more control of all the alternative media that exists. Like the Huffington Post, you know, we think about like if you're our age, if somebody's a reporter and somebody's writing news articles or op-eds, we think about them being like 40. We think about them having like, I mean, it's not like the media was ever like completely ethical or trustworthy, but we don't think about it being like a 21-year-old girl who just got out of some mid-level college with like a gender studies major, but so many of the people populating the information on the internet are similar to that, and they're actually informing the conversation, informing the opinions of younger people. I don't even know how we got to this point in the conversation, Jamie, but here we are. I think we were talking about comedy, but I agree, it is getting harder and harder out there, and I do hope that somebody disruptive comes along who can, like I said, have the ability to diffuse so much of this tension and just somehow make somebody on the other side laugh. But it might be wishful thinking at this point, and that's kind of sad.
Yeah, I think it is probably wishful thinking right now. I don't know. I mean, maybe at a turn, Brett, for the better. Surely there's some young children out there right now. We were always probably – I'm sure you were too. You was always an anarchist at school. You probably never liked the rules. I mean, I think that's probably born in most of us that have chosen, you know, a liberty train of mind and realized that you're probably lied to a whole lot. I'm sure that my story ain't the only one where they're like, hey, marijuana is horrible for you. And then you try it and you go, oh, that ain't bad. Well, did they lie about coke? And, I'm sure that there's still a generation of people who question coming up. I don't know what went wrong with me, but I never took anybody's word for anything. You know, I had to touch the stove to see if it was hot.
Yeah.
That's how I've lived my life. So surely that gene hasn't disappeared totally, and somebody will stand up and rebel against, you know, the political correctness on both sides of the aisle. It's not just on my Facebook, it was always Republicans that I see because I live in Oklahoma and we are a complete red state.
Yeah.
It might be different on your feed, I'm sure, wherever you live. But, dude, I mean, you know, Republicans are as big as snowflakes as Democrats are.
They get
their feelings hurt just as bad, you know, and they ask for things to be banned just as bad. And I'm like, it's literally like watching children put their fingers in their ears when you try to tell them a new idea, which I've always embraced new ideas. I thought they were interesting. I wanted to see what other people thought. I think that's probably the best thing that you can say about the Libertarian Party is that, you know, they're probably more free thinkers per capita in the Libertarian Party than there are in the other parties.
I agree. And I think that a person who I'm not a huge fan of, and he definitely, I think he picked a lot of the wrong enemies and really came under fire in the last couple of years was the chairman of the Libertarian Party, Nicholas Sarwark. And one of the things that he went after Tom Woods and he went after Mises, and I don't think that was a good move. That certainly wasn't to alienate people like that. I can't see the value in it unless you're, you know, ideologically driven by something else. But, you know, I did hear him say in defense of trying to expand the tent. And like one of the things that happened in New Hampshire was, you know, they made the Libertarian tent so big that a lot of people who didn't belong in there wound up underneath it, you know?
Yeah.
Especially like in Keene, where they were like, oh, you do drugs and hate the cops too? You're just like us. And they weren't. The people that were to just increase the numbers, you know, it was definitely quantity over quality, and it led to some pretty disastrous situations. But it was a microcosm of what's been happening in the Libertarian Party. But what Nicholas Sarwark said that I actually liked was, and I think Tom Woods and I talked about this not too long ago, was, are you really that afraid of these ideas? Is libertarianism, is this philosophy so fragile that it can't survive opening new voices and opening this up to new voices and new ideas? Like, don't you believe the best ideas will survive? That could be bullshit, but I think it's an interesting thought. And I feel like it was good to embrace these ideas when I did, because I was somebody who came from the left. I thought I had everything figured out. And when suddenly you find yourself in a tiny minority of political thought, you do have to sharpen your wits and you do have to prepare your defenses. And you realize that if someone's a Republican and they have the Wall Street Journal and they have Fox News, they don't have to really investigate much of the opposition. And if somebody is a Democrat and they have CNN or MSNBC and the New York Times or, you know, the public schools or higher education or Hollywood or everything that they have, you don't spend a lot of time doing opposition research because you just have enough of a bubble to make you feel like you're always right. But we never had that bubble. We always knew we were outsiders, and we knew we had to defend ourselves against pretty much the mass of everybody else. And because we were kind of obsessive about a lot of this political stuff, at least a lot of us were, we had to study up. We had to learn their ideas well enough to argue against them. So I think, you know, maybe it attracts people who are more free thinkers. I think it attracts people, as I've said so many times, a lot of people are attracted to this philosophy for the wrong reasons, because they're outsiders and they're looking for justifications for why they don't fit in. And the reasons why they don't fit in might have to do with personal defects that they could resolve. So, like, obviously it's super popular to blame the world for problems that are personal or problems that are personal historical, you know, that come from how you were raised, if that didn't go well, or other challenges that you might have in your own life, to say, oh, no, it's the world that's deformed and defective and I'm totally fine and I don't need to work on anything. And we see that's so popular in the world today, right? The world is sexist and racist and intolerant, and those are the problems, and I'm just great, and, you know, I'm a crusader for what's right and good. And that's an easy thing to criticize, and it's an easy thing to make fun of. But libertarianism seemed, from my experience anyway, seemed to have a lot of the same impulses. So, yeah. But the good part, the benefit is it did, like, raise awareness about the diversity of ideas that are in the world. And again and again and again, I've been humbled by how little I know when we look at the entire world of ideas. Yes, this is a great philosophy. It doesn't answer every question. It doesn't solve every problem. It aligns the best with my morals. It aligns the best with the vision that I have for the world, with the vision that I have for myself, you know, because it's personal first, with the vision that I have for education, what I think works in education, which does have a lot to do with individual freedom. But yeah, I mean, I'm really grateful that I discovered this and that I embraced this and that I, you know, took this message into the world for sure.
Oh, absolutely. And if you believe in something, share that with them.
Right.
If you truly believe it, dude, I think it was Penn Jillette. He was talking, and Penn is, he's an atheist.
Yep.
Right. And, I saw an interview with him before, and this really, I thought it was really cool of him. He said after a show that this guy was just standing there and, waiting for him. And he handed Penn a Bible. He wanted Penn to have a Bible. And Penn's take on this, instead of being shunning of the guy or something like that, he said, this guy believes what he believes so much that he wanted me to have it too.
Yeah.
And he admired that man for doing that. He wasn't an ass about it. He goes, if that was so important to him, he had to tell me.
Right.
And that's every message that you have that you're convicted of. If you truly believe something, you have to let that out and you have to tell other people, this is what I believe. And I think if you really believe something's the right way and don't share that with other people, well, then what good did you do? And
yeah,
it's nothing.
I totally agree. And what I've learned is what's so much more valuable than what you can say to other people is what you can show other people. Right.
Oh,
and
absolutely.
Obviously the topic that we got together to talk about tonight fits into that idea personally. Like, a huge segment of my website is like the ongoing process of developing as a person, getting more health freedom, getting more relationship freedom, getting more financial and professional freedom, and then location freedom. Like, I've been able to develop because of what I do, but showing that to people intrigues them. It makes them interested, that they want to know more about you once you have, you know, a collection of those things. And obviously, health is a huge part of that. Like, oh, what do you do to stay in shape? And why is that important to you? And that can be the doorway into a very enriching conversation for that person. But I failed for a decade of my life trying to say things to people about what I believe. And I feel like I've been a little more successful showing people the results of embracing these ideas, like individual freedom, self-ownership, personal responsibility. I am no master, but I am somebody who has been on a path in this direction for a long time, and the path has yielded a lot of positive results, and you know, I'm very happy for that. When that signal is sent into the world, that really, I think, paves the way for more persuasion about a lot of this other stuff to take place. When people are, you know, screaming on the street about how important these ideas are and they don't have clean clothes on, that doesn't really resonate with other people, you know?
Nobody takes a man in a kilt serious anymore, Brett. And kilts are the downfall of the Libertarian Party. Kilts and swords. Because there
and
was
fedoras,
a guy.
And fedoras.
Nobody takes that serious, Brett. So just wear your Pittsburgh hat representing your home city now.
Yeah.
So you always, what do they say, preach the truth in love.
Yeah.
And you just always have, you have to do that on a one-on-one basis. I mean, I'm sure that, you know, Free Talk Live can't get as personal as what like this conversation had.
Sure.
Because there's so many different topics and there's so many different listeners. But, you know, this is just a one-on-one conversation. And I guess some of your listeners might weed through a whole hour of it. But it's just a conversation. It's honesty between two people. And keep that in your daily life. I mean, keep it with strangers. There's no reason to be checking out to be at Walmart.
And not talk to the people around you.
And not talk to people.
Right.
Everybody's so stuck into their phones. Everybody's so stuck into their own lives. I mean, it's kind of fun just to freak them out. You know, a stranger's talking to them. You can literally make people's days. It could be about the type of peanut butter they buy and the reason they like that type.
It's one of the things that I loved about this city so much. Pittsburgh is very neighborhood-based. And, you know, Mr. Rogers' neighborhood was here. You know, that show took place here. And there's so many Mr. Rogers. I live in one. I live in a kind of Mr. Rogers neighborhood where, you know, that model that was at the beginning of the show. That's not like too dissimilar from the neighborhood that I live in. And I actually like was attracted to it for that reason. But people prioritizing community over the larger divisions that try to suck our attention away from one-on-one interactions and community interactions. I remember, you know, growing up, my dad was a conservative in a town that was pretty left-wing, and he was the head of the school board, and that created all kinds of tension at family, you know, neighborhood get-togethers. I remember him arguing with people, and I remember how much all the teachers at my own elementary school hated his guts. But what was always more important than those political divisions was building the library, was mowing the Little League field. In a small town in New Hampshire, that was a more important place to focus for the people there than all of this stuff that sucks our attention today.
And it still is today. Yeah.
And I see that here in this city.
It's how you live a happy life, dude, you know? And that's all we're looking for. Everybody's looking to live a happier life. You surround yourself with people who actually care about you. And man, sometimes you don't get that on a political party at all.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you can have a Democrat and a Republican. And if you honestly just sit down and talk to them, they're like us. They want to, dude, they want to go fishing. They want to go hunting. They want to go catch the ball game. They want to go to the gym. They're just like us. It's just, it's developing that relationship's the only way that you change things, I think, dude.
Yeah.
On any level.
I think it's harder today. I think it's since 2016, that's gotten harder to do, but it is still not impossible to do, right? Like the divisions are deeper now. And that it's been exacerbated by so much of how things happen in the news, but we had the ability.
It's been what baited?
Exacerbated? Made worse.
Oh, I thought you said something else, Brett.
It's been made worse by you know, the way the media and social media functions today. But it's not impossible, right? Like, those bridges could be built before. They can be built now. I agree that a lot of people do still recognize that these more local things, these closer, these more human things are the real priorities in life. And they just need to be reminded of that by somebody going up to them in the gym and saying, hey, nice buys.
Good job.
Or whatever.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay, maybe don't compliment their body.
Yeah.
All right. Thank you so much for coming on the show. Even though the conversation went in a lot of different directions, I'm still going to call it Jamie Crane Profiles in Male Enhancement.
I like it, dude.
Yeah.
Thanks for having me, Brett.
All right. Hey, let's talk soon. And thank you so much for doing this conversation. I had a great time.
Y'all have a great Christmas, all right?
You too. Take care, Jamie.
See you, bud.